in a beautiful state.
Hey, come over here, watch your step. You're looking for Brian. He's been out there for a few days. The fire has been rolling. You won't believe how often this happens. Go out there but don't say anything. He won't bite. I'm watching out for you.
Yep, just look up at like all the stars. Like, you see how many stars it is? It's sick, man. Just so many. It's kind of like one of those, I don't know, one of those anything is possible type moments, you know? We all have those, or at least we should. You know, sometimes, like, I stare at them, and then they turn into tweets, and into memes, and stuff like that. And then it gets, well, then I'm stuck out here for a few days. It's just, I don't know, something about it. She told you I was out here going crazy, didn't she? She's dramatic. Don't listen to her. Clearly, I'm not going crazy. But I am stuck. It's just the whole opinions. Just a wave of opinions. It's all about this Elon Musk thing. It's just everywhere. Everybody's everywhere on this. Like, I know it's a big move. I know it's like a whole... It literally can change the tide of humanity. And he's literally buying, like, algorithms. So, it is something to... I mean, I guess everybody talking about it only makes sense, right? But just be having me stuck, you know? Elon Musk is buying Twitter. And we have to, we gotta see what that means. Let's figure something out. Cora!
Yes?
Don't try to sound all cute now. Got them thinking I'm crazy. Can you turn the monitors on out here?
I am cute. Monitors are on.
Yeah.
This is Live BW, Season 7, Mod Title, What is Elon Musk Buying Twitter For? Episode 172. This is my story. This is our story.
All right. So I went in, grabbed my phone too, and I got you some water. Where do we begin? It's probably best to begin with the news, right? The obvious news that broke on whatever social media platform you want to say is your favorite. You know, it was everywhere because this move by Elon Musk gives him a single-handed, unprecedented amount of psychological power. Okay? That sounds crazy. As crazy as it sounds, it's true. All of those powerful algorithms that have reshaped how we communicate with each other and have reshaped how we digest information, all of those powerful algorithms are now going to be under his fingertips. And it's not like he's an evil genius or anything like that. At least, I don't think so. I haven't met him. But if he's listening, I would love to go to space. I ain't gonna lie to you. But there's no clear indication that this power is gonna be used for any bad. In fact, his very premise of why he made this move is for what he thinks is good. And it's his push or reach for free speech. Or his idea of free speech, I should say. Hold on to that. Him asking that question is kind of what started the conversation. And then what kind of, I don't want to say ended it, because it's definitely still going on, but put it like this, he put the whole bag on the table when he struck that $44 billion deal to buy the social media giant Twitter.
Elon Musk's Twitter takeover complete. The deal, of course, will be fully done sometime this year, but after days of waiting, I mean, it wasn't even months. It was literally days of waiting. Tesla CEO Elon Musk will buy Twitter for $54.20 a share, or $44 billion, in a deal that will take the popular microblogging service private because he feels not quite popular enough. So that purchase price actually represents about a 38% premium to Twitter's closing price back on April 1st. That was the last trading day before Elon Musk disclosed his approximately 9% stake in Twitter.
Now that shows that he was serious.
He's secured about $25.5 billion of fully committed debt and margin loan financing. And then he is providing an approximately $21 billion in equity commitment.
He was very serious about what he was speaking about and what he wanted to fight for. At least that's how he was coming off, like as if he's fighting for free speech. He showed that he was even more serious after the initial claims of him possibly buying the social media platform by lining up the funding to actually make it happen, including some financing from Morgan Stanley, in an agreement that includes a fee of $1 billion that he or Twitter would have to pay if they back out of this whole deal, which is a strong possibility, and I'm gonna tell you why before the end of the show. Now, this April 25th article from Dan Primack from Axios, I think it highlights a good portion of this deal. Dan calls it a quote, earthquake in global media and politics, where Twitter hosts the discourse. So that's what makes it so polarizing of a headline. As I mentioned, like with Elon Musk buying Twitter, he actually is buying like people's thinking patterns, and he's buying the ability to sway those patterns, whether or not anyone really knows what's going on, including him. Well, I know he knows, but whether that's like on purpose, I really don't know, because I feel like a nefarious person, only a nefarious person would do that, or more than likely a nefarious person would do that. And I can't say that that's him. Like, people don't like him for whatever reason. I've never had an issue with them, and it has nothing to do with the fact that, you know, I want to go to space one day. It's just I literally never had a problem with the guy. But he literally will own the town square of everything digital. The place where we go to argue, the place where we go to laugh, where we go to cry about different events. One man just bought that. Those stars. As Dan continues, I really like this part too. It's sure to be criticized by those who disagree with Musk's laissez-faire view on content moderation, and cheered by those who believe Twitter has been too heavy-handed with its block button. Now, here's Musk's statement from, you know, the press release. He says, free speech is the bedrock of a functioning democracy, and Twitter is the digital town square, hey, I said that, where matters vital to the future of humanity are debated. I also want to make Twitter better than ever by enhancing the product with new features, making the algorithm open source to increase trust, defeating the spam bots, and authenticating all humans. Twitter has tremendous potential. I look forward to working with the company and the company of users to unlock it. Now, the question becomes whether or not you believe those words. And even beyond that, and a more important question, is whether or not you feel them. Whether or not you trust it. I feel like the line between all of that is super thin. But however you answer that question is going to be the answer to whether or not you stay on the platform. But I think a majority of the fallout is some sort of like political ignorance. Now, when I say that word, I'm not trying to be rude, or I'm not trying to be like crass about it, but literally the definition of ignorance. I think that's why a lot of opinions are being thrown out as they have been over the last couple of days or so. But some of the concerns are valid, and whether they're right or wrong, they do raise a question that we will have to answer at some point. What should be the limits on social media? If we know that certain behavior is harmful, if we know that like social media is very influential, obviously, I mean, there's legit scientific research behind that. I've said it to you a million times, and we're only a couple episodes into this season. But let's hear some of the claims, and I'm going to break down some of that political ignorance I was talking about earlier. We'll tap into Elon Musk's political background, some of the decisions that he's made, and we probably can learn a lot from some of his past deals to see what this Twitter deal really means. Hang on to that, though. I'm going to go in, get some more marshmallows and some more coffee, and BRB. of my favorite authors, John C. Maxwell, said that change is inevitable, growth is optional. And I can't help but wonder, is growth on the other side of this change that we're seeing with Twitter? The outrage about it all is a two-ply form of fear, from my perspective, based on security of thoughts or security of the soul, really. Because a lot of what we see on a timeline, it just, listen, it goes eyes, brain, soul, and it just lives in there. And it's a little scary that somebody has enough money to just wake up one day and buy that. But the other side of it is a fear of the unknown of the other side of this change. Because will it be growth? Or will it become a cesspool of thoughts, 280 characters at a time? Or more of a cesspool of thoughts, I should say, because that's what it's going to be anyway. Let's dive into some of the changes that I think we can expect on the other side of this big deal and what it could all mean for us. And I think we should start with Elon Musk's tweet himself that he sent off right after the news broke on the 25th about him purchasing Twitter. Right after noon, he said, "I hope that even my worst critics remain on Twitter, because that is what free speech means. 3.2 million people liked it. And it's me. I'm 3.2 million. Well, I'm one of the 3.2 million. Because that's a statement that, you know, when I look at it and I completely remove the emotional bias, the political bias, the racial bias that exists, even though we don't want to necessarily admit that. But all of those biases and pre-notions and all of that, when I remove all of that and just look at these characters that he put together as this tweet when the news broke, I hearted it. I had to like it. Because that is what free speech is. It's the dark side of free speech. It's the belief that although somebody is an asshole or a jerk, they still are entitled to their thoughts. And it's a tough line to toy. It's a political border between two territories that pretend to be friends when they need to, but have been at war for centuries. It's that line between everybody should be able to think how they want to think, say what they want to say, and everybody should be free, except for thinking like that. Or except for being free from X, Y, and Z, you know? It's a question that everyone has to ask themselves. All of us voting eligible adults, what is free speech? What is it? Because if you thought that last decade's concerns around free speech were chaotic, to say the least, this decade's arguments about it is really going to throw you off. Because it's one of those conversations that we can't just keep putting off. At some point we have to decide, what does free speech mean? And then how does social media fit into that idea of free speech? Because if Musk is talking about replenishing Twitter as a digital town square, which I don't know which one of us said it first. I guess he said it first, but whatever. But if he's talking about making that a digital town square, I mean, it's for the town. Everybody. All shapes, sizes, colors, tongues, cultures, backgrounds, genders, everybody in the town square, everybody, even the people that you don't like. And considering that Elon Musk dons himself as the quote-unquote free speech absolutist, we can pretty much anticipate that one of the first changes we're going to see is that it's really going to be for everybody. Whereas right now, it's for everybody until you do something that makes it not for you anymore. Now, I'm not talking about the bots. He addressed that too. We'll get to that later. But I'm not talking about the bots. I'm not talking about the scammers. Clearly, they have an issue. Like, we know we don't want you around. That's not even about free speech. That's about abuse. That's a whole different conversation. But I do have a lot of people on my timeline who really, honestly, I mean, I don't know if I go as far to call them friends. But, you know, they are people who I would sit next to in the bar, get a beer. Like, you know, we have had some sort of interaction. In a lot of cases, these people are people that I've met in the different markets that I've worked in, and they work in different branches of policy. Some of them serve as congressmen and women. Some of them serve as representatives. Some of them are, you know, local media, but they're on the other side of the aisle, which I don't even know if I can say that for me, because sometimes I kind of feel like I'm in the aisle. But their thinking isn't traditionally something that I agree with. Their approach to policy isn't traditionally something that I agree with, but they are on my timeline. In recent years, Twitter has found itself as a social media platform that has kind of put people out of the circle, if you will, or delivered some sort of censorship on what people are saying, what certain people are saying, basically based on those thought patterns or based on their, the sharing of their thoughts, if you will. Now, according to a Guardian article from April 26, here's a list of banned Twitter users. It's, you know, it's heftier than I thought it was going to be when I started researching this, so I won't mention everybody. But a couple of the prominent names, the names that you'll know, Alex Jones, the right-wing conspiracy theorist, he was suspended in 2018 for violations of the platform's abusive behavior policy, and I believe his InfoWars website account was suspended too. Another name you may have heard of, Milo Yiannopoulos. Now, I saw this guy speak at one of those schools on the West Coast. I forgot what it was. It might have been UCLA or something like that. But man, they chased him out the school. Like, I will never forget that video. And I also will never forget how upset it made me feel to kind of hear some of his thought patterns. He does say some things that kind of make you just, you know, like, whoa, wait a minute. But nonetheless, he's a right-wing writer who was banned in 2016 for a situation with Leslie Jones, some sort of abuse that had to deal with her reboot of Ghostbusters. Another name you'll know is Marjorie Taylor Greene, the wild lady that be screaming whenever Democrats are talking in the House. I don't know what her issue is. She says some wild stuff too. She was suspended by Twitter in January of this year for violating policies on coronavirus misinformation. And of course, the big one that everybody mentions is Donald Trump, the former president. I ain't got to introduce him. You know him. He was suspended on January 8th of last year, two days after the insurrection. Twitter cited that Trump's repeated violations of the company's rules and the risk of further incitement of violence, end quote. Trump had more than 88 million followers when he was banned. And I think that he's the big fish with the big target on his back, somehow being associated with Elon Musk buying Twitter. Well, I shouldn't say somehow, because the idea of free speech, I mean, theoretically, judging by what Musk calls free speech, the idea of that means that this list is going to be null and void, honestly. That these people will be able to go back to Twitter and say the things, the very things that got them suspended indefinitely, which, I mean, have to have had hurt someone. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in the predicament that they're in, on the outside of the club, and they can't get in. And talking about Twitter, not the actual club. But if free speech is a right, the question becomes, do these people have a right to be on Twitter? Now, I'll tell you straight up, you ain't got to worry about that big fish. Trump doesn't want to come back. Or at least that's what he says. Here's Yahoo Finance.
With Elon Musk's bid for Twitter successful and his avowed support of free speech, there are a lot of questions about whether Donald Trump might be returning to the platform. Musk has also talked about that he was not necessarily in favor of permanent bans, and Trump has said he wouldn't come back, although who knows?
Who knows is right. With 88 million followers, I mean, and his political aspirations that he still is holding on to, and just his natural affinity for, like, power, I don't know that I see Trump leaving that 88 million, those 88 million souls on the table like that. But he says he doesn't want to come back, and he does have his own social media platform named Truth Social, so he might be a little busy. Everyone else on that list, I think it is a firm possibility that a lot of those people could come back. But even beyond that, just like it was mentioned in that Yahoo Finance clip, Elon Musk does not like the permanent ban. He doesn't like that idea of banning someone permanently. So a change that you can really expect, like, if I could bundle all of this into one big change, I think you will see a lot more of the political commentary from the Alex Joneses and Marjorie Taylor Greens and such. Although they say some wild stuff sometimes, majority of the time, I can only guess that the door will still be open for them, or will reopen for them, I should say. And with a platform like Twitter, where you could just speak your mind and see who feels you on it, I wouldn't be surprised if that door reopening will kind of echo into creating more thought patterns that mirror that of the Marjorie Taylor Greens and the Alex Joneses and the Milo Yiannopouloses and etc. That's just part of what happens on social media, because it's the exact same thing that happens socially in real life. Some of your friends may introduce an idea to you that you agree and end up living by. Well, it's the same thing, no matter what side of the aisle you're on. So again, the question becomes, where does Twitter lie? Is Twitter on the side of the aisle, or is it completely in the middle? And what does free speech mean in regards to that? Because I do think that this change is definitely going to come. Another change that you can anticipate having or creating great waves is the fact that Twitter is likely going private. And that's a quote from the CNBC article from Wednesday, April 27th by Nicholas Vega. And it's based on the idea of what Musk is or has been mentioning a lot of this week. And that's the fact that a lot of the changes that need to be made, quote, can only be done if it's a private company, which means that it's less cooked in the kitchen. Less ears and mouths are part of big decisions. And it works in some companies' favors to be private. And it works in some companies' favors to be on Wall Street. I mean, we really don't know what's on the other side of this change. But we do know that Twitter founder and ex-CEO Jack Dorsey agreed with it. Agreed with the idea of making Twitter private again. As he said on Monday that Twitter has been owned by Wall Street and the ad model. He continued that Twitter going private is the, quote, correct first step. Now, it's no secret that Twitter adopted the typical, you know, advertising income model or advertising-based income model because we're bombarded with all sorts of ads all of a sudden. Like, the timeline, I feel like a couple weeks ago, I literally was laying on the bed just stopping and analyzing that I would see a tweet, an ad, a tweet, an ad, a tweet. Like, it would just roll, you know? And I do think that seeing some sort of rollback of all of that is going to happen. As long as Twitter can find a way to bring in or generate that income and not lose out on that advertising money, or at least be able to make the advertising money somewhere else. That was a lot, but I think you know what I'm trying to say. And I think that with this move going private, I think this also could spell a lot of U-turns or a lot of like aggressive driving is what I call it in decision making. And it's what private companies can do because you don't have to go through a board or hall of decision makers. I mean, it's a private company. So a lot of the things that seem impossible or a lot of things that haven't happened or took forever to happen with Twitter, like the edit button and all of that, which still hasn't happened, but you know what I'm saying. A lot of those things might not have to go through all of the hoops that they've had to go through over the last couple of years. Because it won't be a board anymore. It'll be a private company. It won't be shareholders to please, you know? They won't want to have to see all of this insane research of, well, if this, then that. What does this mean for my money, basically? None of that will exist anymore. Elon's buying all of that. And the private company does have a little more room to stretch out, if you will. Now, there's a small list of other, how do I call these changes? What do I nominate these changes as? I'll just say, household items, if you will. These are things that Musk has specifically said that he wants to change about Twitter. And they're not as deep as the free speech conversation, but a lot more surface. For example, the addition of that edit button, which I mentioned literally a couple seconds ago. And Twitter has said that it's already in the works, so apparently we are going to get an edit button. He also wants users who subscribe to Twitter Blue, which is a new pay-for-play way to enjoy Twitter, if you will. But he wants subscribers to Twitter Blue to be able to pay with his cryptocurrency, or his favorite cryptocurrency, I should say, Dogecoin. That's how he says it. I'm sorry. He also says that he wants Twitter's algorithm to be open source so that it'll increase trust in the platform, which we could park right here for a second. The fact that these companies hide their algorithm behind this huge curtain, it is very untrustworthy, if you will. That personally is what causes a lot of anxiety in me, because it's like you just don't know. It's kind of like being graded on like a speech or something in front of a two-way mirror, like, and you can't see on the other side if it's working or not, or if it's, or how you can engage with the crowd. It's difficult. It's difficult to manage. So I do think that platforms, namely Twitter, because that's what we're talking about, being a little more open about their algorithm That definitely will help me trust it a little bit more, you know? Because it doesn't feel like as daunting, if you will. It feels a little more possible to be social. And for somebody like me, that little ounce of possibility is very important, you know? And also, something else that you're going to love is that he wants to eliminate those spam bots. And he says he wants to authenticate all real humans with the verification badge of some sort. And that's going to be a very weird change, like super weird. Because it's like, if I don't see that badge, well, what am I looking at, you know? 9 times out of 10, it'll be a brand or a website or some sort of outlet, you know? But what about if it is a robot? What about if it is some sort of AI, you know? It's just, that's where we are in technology and in time now. And it's exciting for somebody who is a little bit nerdy like me, you know? But it can be a little overwhelming. And this is another big change that everybody was wondering about. And it does look like there won't be any layoffs for now, according to the CNBC article. And there hasn't been any reports of any planned layoffs. And that's according to a company-wide town hall that they had when the deal was announced. But they say that, quote, once the deal closes, we don't know which direction the platform will go. And the CEO of corporate advisory firm The Value Alliance, Eleanor Bloxham, told CNBC that Twitter has never seen the level of volatility in the past that they are likely to see going forward. I think that maybe Twitter employees should prepare their resumes if they can't stomach that. And the reason why that matters to users is that because what we're looking at now is essentially the brainchild of those 7,000 employees and, of course, the shareholders and, you know, the board and whatnot. But a lot of those ideas and a lot of the things that we experience on the app, they're built and put in place by those employees. And just like every company with a revolving door or in some sort of transitional phase, most times it affects the product. So it's just something to keep your eye open for in the weeks ahead. If you hang out for a second, I'll tell you why I think that free speech isn't the issue. I think that it's misinformation. It may be time to draw that line. Question is, what line is it? Hang out. So as I've mentioned multiple times today, there is a lot of fear in the air when it comes to life on Twitter after Elon Musk purchased it. A lot of people are very uncomfortable, very unsettled by that. Now, I told you I think a lot of it is a survival thing or a lot of it is a soul thing because we all know how powerful social media can be to our mental and to our insides, if you will. That was very dramatic, but yeah. That's initially what I think it is, but on the other side of it, people are worried about what this push for quote-unquote free speech means for the platform and for the world at large. Because if, as we've discussed in this episode, those tweets, those thoughts, they are contagious. And 9 times out of 10, you know, when somebody sees something on a timeline, you either have a reaction of support or a reaction of shunning it. And a lot of times, you know, that reaction of support means that that particular thought multiplies. So I wouldn't be surprised if a high percentage of people approach this free speech conversation in terms of Twitter, this free speech conversation, and are fearful that more hate speech is going to be spewed than anything. In fact, according to Srinivas Mazumdaro from DW and Eric Jensen, a sociologist from the University of Warwick, if the people with the loudest voices can abuse others into not participating, that's not really free speech. Jensen says, it's a bit concerning when you think about what Musk's ideas mean in practice. But that's one side of free speech. The other side of the free speech conversation is not about abusive rhetoric at all. It's about misinformation, which I believe is actually at the base of what we need to be discussing at this point. I don't think that there should be But let me not say I don't think that this should be. I think that the first priority should be a approach to regulatory efforts to stop the spread of misinformation. That's the poison. Sure, you know, hateful words are poisonous as well. You know how I am. I'm a positive, peaceful guy. I try to be. And sure, some people's summations of other people's cultures and sizes and the way you look, where you're from, how you sound, how some of those people address those things online are definitely hateful. But that's a free speech thing of how someone is feeling at the time. I can't tell somebody how to feel. I can just mute you. I can just block you. But that's my approach to it. Just get off my timeline. If the algorithm wasn't so crazy, you wouldn't see it anyway, you know? But what I think the actual concern is the misinformation that was floating around during the pandemic, or the misinformation that was floating around during the election that caused the insurrection, or that caused millions of people to die across the world because they didn't know how to get the reins on their thoughts on the pandemic, how to approach it, because they were flooded with misinformation from a lot of people who I would go so far to say it, to call them prominent people who we would call leaders in various cultures and various rooms. They were putting out some things that were incorrect about the coronavirus that should be regulated first ASAP. And the reason I say that is because there is no argument about that, period. There was science, there were numbers. There should be a threshold to validate those numbers, validate that research, and accept that as common knowledge, almost like an encyclopedia. Everything else should be prohibited. The real concern is misinformation, not free speech. There are some things that are being spread and have been spread that literally make absolutely no sense, that cannot be proven anywhere. The court of law or the barbershop. But it was spread, and it was just spread freely. That should stop. But that's just my view. Because even then, I'm pretty sure there are some people who feel as though that is free speech. I don't know what that looks like, and honestly, I don't know if that's possible. Because that line between the misinformation conversation and the free speech conversation is so blurred, sometimes it's not even there. I really don't know, like, what we are entering in. But what I do know is that the purchase of Twitter, that what happened this week, I do know that that was a gut punch of some sort in this conversation. A very necessary punch, in my summation. Because the pot was going to boil over at some point. You can't just have people just saying whatever, sending millions of people to their graves, and then on the other side of that, you can't just have places that are supposed to be neutral all of a sudden making moves against a list of alt-right people. I mean, you can do that, but you can't do that and say that it's a neutral site. You might as well just say that it's a place for liberals, or a place for people who think like this, or a place for people who think like that. You might as well just completely drop the moniker or the idea of anybody's welcome here. It's a place for everybody. Maybe it's not. Maybe that's not what people really wanted. And if that's the case, then that's a whole nother conversation that we need to have. In fact, that's one that we are going to have in a couple moments. But as a Twitter user, a proud Twitter user since 2009, was it 2009? I'm pretty sure I could look at it. Nah, it was before that. Nope, I'ma look. Matter of fact, I don't have to look. Cora!
Yes, Ryan.
When did I join Twitter? Can you check that and send it out here? Or just say it.
It looks like you joined Twitter in May of 2009.
May 2009. Maybe I had another page before that, because I feel like I had it in high school, but... Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. I thought you forgot about me.
Oh, I did. I'm not going to lie to you, but it's nothing personal. I just, you know, kind of was in it. So where was I? Oh, as a proud Twitter user since 2009, it was time for a gut punch. We needed it, okay? Like, we needed it. And I think that's why I've been out here, because I've been trying to figure out how to put all of this in words. And thank you for coming out here, because you helped me with that. But we needed that. Instagram needs it too. Facebook, it may be too late for Facebook. We might not be able to save that. But things have certainly changed since my time here on Twitter. And a lot of the changes were just what my grandmother used to call willy-nilly. It just goes everywhere. Fleets came and went. I never forget that. That was like the moment when I was like, wait a minute, Twitter kind of for anybody right now. And how do we feel about... Well, I won't get into that. Well, yes, I will. I don't have to be a jerk about it. We want loyalty. We ain't really here for everybody who's here for everybody. You feel me? You know, like, And I kind of got that feeling that Twitter was, it was just everywhere. And there's no doubt that Elon Musk, starting the top of this week with the big news of the purchase, it's no doubt that that rocked the entire social media world. And honestly, I would go so far to say that it rocked the world, period. Because it's no doubt that something's going to come from this, you know? My hope is that it's something good, though. All right, there's no doubt that Twitter is becoming something. This punch is just like any other punch. It's either going to bruise or whatever, but it might teach you a lesson, because that's what some punches are for. But no matter what, something's going to happen from this. And the question is, that something, is it something that you want to be a part of, you know? If free speech, quote unquote, is what Elon Musk is fighting for, just like he was fighting for the environment and built Tesla. Sure, it was a good idea and, you know, made a lot of money off of it, but obviously it's a very successful company. But the idea of it in general was because he feels that a big part of the bright future of our world involves electric vehicles. And he put his efforts into building a fleet of those electric vehicles to help everybody across the world make the transition from the traditional vehicle to electric vehicle. That's what Tesla is about. At the base of it, that's literally what it is, what it is for, to solve that quote unquote problem that Elon Musk discovered. SpaceX, another one of his babies, which he has some great businesses, by the way. That's to help make space travel more for everybody, you know? I would say that some of it now at this point is the competition between SpaceX and Blue Origin. That probably fuels him, no pun intended, you know, but it was to solve a problem that everyone can't get to space. And he's been flying people up there. He's also been doing a lot of work with, SpaceX has also been doing a lot of work with NASA, to, you know, just to do some things that weren't possible literally 5 years ago, you know? So my question is now, if we look at that pattern of behavior, where does that put Twitter? And then where does that put you? Because if free speech is the base, if free speech is the quote-unquote problem that Elon Musk is approaching, as he did with the environment and Tesla, or as he did with space flight and SpaceX, is that a world that you want to speak in? Because it's, you know, if that's the base of it, that's what's going to happen. Those are going to be the changes. So if that idea of possibly seeing some of that hateful rhetoric, if that's not what you want and you feel as though it's going to happen in an abundance now, then Twitter may not be for you tomorrow. But if you ask me, which you didn't, but you're here, you're out here with me, so I'm pretty sure you want to know something that I'm thinking. If you ask me, I think that it's not just the hateful speech. I think that it's the political aggression that creates that tension between users, just like it does in real life. You know, we are a very argumentative society now across the entire world. Everything is a debate because of, I think it's because of the endorphins, and I would love to look at it and really, matter of fact, we are going to investigate that. That's going to happen. But I would think that it's because of the endorphins that you feel from throwing out some of those opinions and getting that support that you get online sometimes. It happens, you know? Whether it's something as simple as a sports opinion about Michael Jordan and LeBron and Kobe and blah, 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 or whether it's something as serious as whether or not you support Joe Biden and his administration. A lot of times those opinions, when they get put out there and somebody shows you love for it, that's an endorphin hit. You actually honestly get, and this is scientifically backed, well, all of this is, but anyways, you actually get an endorphin hit when someone disagrees with you as well. It is some sort of attention, you know? So I think that all of that has just ramped up the idea of disagreement and has created this political space that feels very aggressive, because it happens in the same arena where we joke about Will Smith slapping Chris Rock, where we joke about an outfit that a celebrity had on, or where we joke about something that, I don't know, Kodak Black did, because I feel like he's always doing something that we're joking about. You know, it just, in that same space, under those 280 characters, in that same space that we laugh and play with each other in, we sometimes see hateful things that are politically charged. Or we sometimes see just, sometimes it's not even quote unquote hateful. Sometimes it's just a political standpoint that we aren't familiar with or weren't familiar with because we weren't raised around that. We don't know how to approach that, you know? We don't even know how to digest that. So it just feels weird, you know? And it's aggressive, you know? And sometimes those political viewpoints are hateful. Sometimes those, like, the things that people say under the guise of a political commentary is hateful. But what I like most about social media, and this is a thought that I have a lot when I tend to feel overwhelmed about social media, I kind of remind myself about this right here. It's nothing but a reflection of the real world. That's all it is. Social media has to be politically aggressive because honestly, life is politically aggressive. It is. And especially, you know, my peers, people around my age, we're just now getting into this age of where we're having these conversations with our friends that it wasn't as deep before. Like, we used to just talk about, I don't know, video games and sneakers, you know, and stuff like that. Now it's like, hey man, you know, how's your 401k? Or did you vote for Biden? You know, it's just like, wow, this happened. It did happen. It's growing up. That's life, you know. It's a blessing because our alternative to that is, well, not growing up. And I don't want to get into any more of that because that would be morbid. And I don't feel like doing that. But social media has to be political because, well, we are. And truth be told, what that means and what that points to is that the real issue of this conversation is something that I do think that Elon Musk is going to solve with Twitter. And that's why I'm telling you right now, I ain't going nowhere. I'm going to be here because I do think Elon Musk is going to solve that problem of the algorithm. The algorithm is the person, or it's not a person at all, but the algorithm is the thing that we need to be side-eyeing. And we should have been side-eyeing since Facebook came up with this thing years ago, because the algorithm is what multiplies a lot of the quote-unquote hateful things. The algorithm is what multiplies those politically charged, highly engaged tweets that end up on your timeline because somebody else disagreed with it, or because somebody else literally just put a heart on it. Now it's in front of you, you know? Like, the algorithm is what did that. So with Elon Musk's focus on making that, removing that curtain that hides the algorithm and just being more open about it, I think that that would solve a lot of our issues. Now, the thing with the algorithm is that it's tied to these public companies, Facebook, Twitter, which not going to be public for much longer, but it's tied to those public companies because that algorithm is what helps to bring in those advertising dollars. You see? So I do think that Elon Musk is going to solve that problem. And I'm looking forward to that. But the question is not, are there going to be changes? The question is, what will the changes be specifically? And then the question after that is, where do you fit into this new age of Twitter? I'll leave you with this. If you're that worried about Elon Musk buying Twitter, which I don't have any issues with the guy. I don't know, you know, exactly what it is. Honestly, I just think that people don't know enough about him. And, you know, when you're rich, you kind of got a target on your back. And also the cultural web. We don't know kind of where he is culturally. But I do know that politically it's been recorded that he's a very in the middle person. He doesn't categorize himself as a Republican or a Democrat. You know, he has no affiliation. But a lot of what people are saying, you would think that he's like a Republican or something, like a staunch Republican. But anyways, if you're that worried about him buying Twitter, maybe this will help you. Lauren Silver Laughlin and Gina Chan from Reuters, they said in an article on Wednesday that, quote, it wouldn't be surprising if Musk's $44 billion deal to buy Twitter didn't happen. And they're citing the fact that Musk backed out of a deal 4 years ago of buying some sort of peanut brittle company to take on Warren Buffett's company, See's Candies. The article says that a major reason, or the biggest reason, that he might back out is because of Tesla. The company's stock fell. It was an alarming amount, I would say, when Elon Musk announced his stake in Twitter. And with Tesla producing half of its vehicles in China, and China not really liking Twitter, it's believed that China could, quote unquote, easily hold Tesla to ransom if Twitter didn't play ball under Elon Musk. So it may not happen. But the question is, if it doesn't happen, is it something that we maybe could have benefited from happening? I don't know. It's just an idea. But you're going to have to draw your own conclusions for yourself. And when you do, let me know what you think. Is Twitter a place that you want to be after Elon Musk purchased it? You can let me know on Twitter, at BJamesLive, or you can hit up the show on Instagram, at LiveXBW. Also, you can answer our survey question. It's exactly what I just said. All right, let's go get some brews.
Bring them out. Put them over there.